Welcome to Crash Concepts, where the economy, energy, and the environment are explored. Up next, fresh ideas and insights into the factors that are driving the world and shaping your future. Presenting information you can't afford to live without, here's Chris Martinson.
Welcome to this Peak Prosperity Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Martinson, and today we are going to discuss the recent market volatility and how to protect your portfolio during such periods. Now, unless you've been under a rock, the opening weeks of 2016 have been terrible for equities and oil and are now among the worst starts to the year, if not the worst start in history, depending on the market we're talking about. And you probably also know my position, which I've held for years, that all this money printing and debt accumulation was going to end in tears. A year ago on this show, Adam Taggart discussed the ins and outs of hedging and risk management with Mike Preston and John Lodra, the lead partners at New Harbor Financial. Today, we're going to build on that and talk about how the team at New Harbor are managing the recent volatility and how their ideas of risk management are working in practice. New Harbor is the financial advisory firm officially endorsed by Peak Prosperity. And for full disclosure, we have a business relationship with them, which we always disclose when we have them on the podcast, and which you will also find within the write-up that's going to accompany this discussion. So now with that out of the way, let's dive right in. Welcome, Mike.
Thanks, Chris.
And welcome, John.
Oh, thanks, Chris. Hello, and hello to listeners.
Great. So, John, I want to start right at the top. Let's just dive right in. Since the beginning of the year, S&P is down about 8.5%. How's your average portfolio performed?
Well, I guess I could put it that we're roughly flat on the year. You know, we're not boasting big gains. You know, we're not, you know, celebrating huge gains from being short the market, but we're roughly flat for almost every one of our clients. So, you know, we're very happy to be, you know, largely, if not entirely, immune from the volatility we've seen so far this year.
So for the average person out there who's just sort of held on, has followed the lead articles in all the major newspapers, they're down 8.5%. They've got to make that back up. You guys are flat.
Yeah, that's about right. And, you know, to be fair, it's, you know, our career and our experience with clients doesn't start at the beginning of the year. You know, you have to be early sometimes to be right. And, you know, certainly we've been positioned in respect of or in anticipation of the kind of thing we're seeing right now for some time. So, you know, we didn't wake up on January 1st and decide to get positioned in the way that we're positioned right now to allow us to avoid much of the decline that has happened this year.
I know, and it's very, very hard to be disciplined, especially in the last end of a rising bubble market. It's really, really hard. So kudos to you gentlemen for that. Mike, again, quick recap for everybody, the sorts of strategies that you use again. So the basic tools and approaches that you talked about before, just so everybody's on the same page with what we mean when we say risk management.
Sure, Chris, this is Mike Preston, of course. We are tactical investment managers. We are making decisions about broad market risk. We're taking more risk at certain times and less risk at other times. What's been really unique about these last few years is that we became more and more conservative starting sometime in late 12 or early 13. And in all fairness, just like John said, we were early in getting mostly, not completely out of the market, but getting mostly out of the market. We're certainly early, and that stung a little bit, and our clients can attest to that. But there's really no way to get out at exactly the top. And so the tools that we use to apply the risk management structure, the style that I just described, are they're investments that most of your listeners will be very familiar with, such as stocks, bonds, exchange-traded funds, options, and even a mutual fund here or there. But a big thing that we do use electively that most money managers on Wall Street don't use is cash. We're not afraid to hold a lot of cash. And that hasn't been very comfortable either the last couple of years, particularly with interest rates at zero. So we've held a good amount of cash, an increasing amount of cash over the last couple of years. And frankly, that's what has helped us weather this most recent downturn.
Now, that holding that cash position, I assume that at some point, you know, you're holding that with the idea of bringing that dry powder out of reserve and beginning to redeploy that. How do you, you know, when does that start? Has it started? You know, when will you know the time is right? And what are you looking for, John?
Yeah, so, you know, we deal in an imperfect science, to be sure, but there are some very, you know, time-tested and statistically robust ways to be in the right neighborhood. You know, we're not about precision, we're about being in the right neighborhood. And, you know, as distant a memory as the 08-09 crisis might be, maybe it's more recent memory for those that have seen the great movie The Big Short, but, you know, it... you didn't have to be exactly out at the top and exactly in at the bottom of that episode to do remarkably better than just a passive close your eyes kind of approach. So we, you know, certainly we have, you know, our viewpoints on where fair market value is for the various markets we look at. And that, you know, things like price to equity ratios, price to sales, price to books, these fundamental measures that a prudent, logical investor would be willing to pay for whatever they're looking at. Let's call it the stock market or a given stock. But in reality, markets behave through animal spirits on the short term, and you know, that's a reality of the world we live in. And so we look at other things like technical indicators, and I'm using kind of a buzzword there to encapsulate a whole bunch of other things. You know, so maybe looking to yesterday as an example. So here we are, you know, the day after a pretty big swoosh down to take out the August 2015 lows. We're now back above those lows, but yesterday was a swoosh that took those lows out. There were some pretty good technical bases for a bounce in the area of 1820 on the S&P 500. And, you know, within just a few points is exactly what happened yesterday. So, you know, do we think that 1820 is the bottom of the market? Absolutely not. You know, there are very good fundamental reasons why the sell-off in this market can go much, much further than we've gone thus far. You know, we would not, you know, first of all, a 20% pullback from the all-time highs is almost can't say a certainty, but a very, very high likelihood. We're a little over halfway there right now, so you know, still plenty to go on that basis. On a almost a slam dunk, you know, kind of average fundamental valuation basis, if you look over a long period of time, getting down to, you know, 1400 or even a little bit below there on the S&P is not at all out of the realm of history in terms of what one might expect. So that's a quite a bit further down from here. You know, here we are at 1800s on the S&P. You know, so it's quite a bit further down there. But rarely do things like that happen in a straight line, and that's where we try to bring our shorter term technical tools to bear to, you know, hopefully do some tactical in and out, if you will, of various asset classes. To capture some of those, you know, breather points. You know, so as we said, you know, like 1820 yesterday in the S&P was a support level. You know, we did some trades for some accounts that actually had the effect of getting modestly invested in stocks yesterday on that pullback, you know, has the ability to hedge on the downside too using some of the tools like Mike talked about with options. So. And it's not a flick of the switch thing, you know, that you might gather from reading some of the headlines that you got to be either all in or all out. It's not that at all. We spent a lot of our time discussing with our investment committee, Mike and me, and our other partner, Bill Cole, you know, position sizes. You know, what is the relevant amount to have exposed in a given market or sector given where we are right now? Right now it happens to be very, very low stock weightings. Which is quite contrary to where we were, like say in 2008, 2009, when we had very large stock weightings, you know, after the big sell-off. So hopefully that wasn't too long-winded, but we use a pretty robust set of tools to help guide us in deploying decisions like that.
And that sounds obviously, you know, within a lot of the day-to-day movements, you're keeping your eye on the ball. It's a very active management style. I'm wondering about too the sort of the macro perspective. You know, as we look across. If you read broadly, which I know you gentlemen do because we talk about it, when you read broadly, though, and you find out what's happening in China, what's happening in Europe, what's happening in the emerging markets, it feels like this is it's a very interconnected investment environment compared to even just 10 or 20 years ago. How much are you sort of factoring in that larger picture as you just sort of data points as you begin to assemble what you're thinking of doing?
Chris, I'll respond to that. This is Mike. We are looking at macro issues or fundamental issues, if you will, when we're making our decisions, as well as looking technical issues. And let me give you a few ideas of some of the themes we might be looking at fundamentally. For instance, in the commodity sector has been hit really, really hard the last couple of years. It's pretty clear to us, and I think a lot of people out there, including you, Chris, based on some of your writings, that deflation seems to be winning here, seems to have the upper hand over inflation short term. Central bankers want inflation. Deflation seems to be what the problem is, and so that's crushing commodities. And there may be some opportunities in some certain commodity markets, like the energy markets, to try to bottom fish some of those things, either the commodities itself or some of the companies that produce those commodities. We have the tools to engage in certain trades that we can have at least a little bit of a hedge. We can enter some of those markets without having to pick the exact bottom. We're talking about some ideas like that as we speak. Other things from a macro perspective that makes sense, we think some core holding in gold makes sense for a lot of people. Gold has been miserable the last 3 or 4 years, unfortunately, and sentiment is probably is about as in the basement as you can imagine. I mean, gold is pretty hated. And frankly, there is some concern, per my previous comments about deflation, there's some concern that gold could continue to be pulled downward by the weight of other commodities in their bear market. However, it's the only thing that we think that could potentially have a positive response to the what we see as recklessness of the central bankers and maybe even a flight to safety type reaction if things get a little crazier here. So gold is certainly part of what we do when we think about. We try to be tactical about it, but there at some level there's some small positions that we hold on a longer term basis. We talked a little bit about energy being down. We look at spread type trades that we can do to attempt to pocket the difference for our investors between two different asset classes, for instance. You know, right now we have still a trade on where we're long the S&P 100 and short the Russell 2000. So we think, frankly, both markets will fall. We just think the small caps will fall faster, and that has happened so far. We might look to take a profit on that sometime soon. Other examples might be buying emerging markets and shorting domestic markets like the S&P, other things we're talking about now. So from a macro fundamentalist big picture point of view, those are some examples of what we're talking about for trade ideas, some of which might actually make into our portfolios that will hopefully give your listeners an idea of how we work.
It's fantastic. Of course, you have to keep your eye on not just the ball, but lots of different balls. As I track things right now, obviously there's a lot of uncertainty across the whole world landscape. It feels a little like 2008 to me again. Not, you know, history rhymes, never exactly repeats, but the rhyming portion of this, the whole emerging market situation right now, speaks to a flood of liquidity that is now draining from those areas where before it was going in. So that loss of liquidity was a hallmark in 2008. It just struck a different sector than emerging markets at that point. And so I guess that leaves open the idea that, you know, one of the number one concerns that I think a lot of average investors have is this idea of a big crash, something that would really come along and fundamentally change the landscape pretty quickly. How do you anticipate that your model portfolio would work during the time of a big crash?
So I'll take a shot at that, Chris. This is John again. So again, I alluded to, we spent a lot of time talking about position sizing. Right now, we have very, very little in the stock market. We never cheer for a crash in the sense that we know a lot of people would likely get harmed for such a scenario. But we also spend our time assessing reality and probabilities, and the likelihood or probability of a crash certainly has, it's never been non-zero, but it's gotten very much a greater likelihood than even just a few weeks ago. There's been a notable sentiment change. So, you know, holding things like cash, holding things like very short-term, high-quality treasury bonds, having some hedges that actually, like Mike talked about, the spread trade that we have on, even in a crash scenario, something like that could actually have positive albeit modest, but positive additive value to an account. So we feel very, and sometimes the simplest thing you can do is the best way to avoid getting harmed in a crash, and that's holding cash and you know, just staying out of harm's way is one of the best ways. It happens to be one of the hardest psychological things to do, but it is one of the very most effective ways. So we feel very, very confident that if a sudden sharp crash type decline were to happen, that our clients would certainly on a relative basis do quite well, and we set our bar pretty high. We hate losing even a penny of money. It's very hard to not do that once in a while, but we would love to try to have our clients be largely unscathed by such a crash. And right now we're positioned in a way where that would likely be the case. That also means you have to know when to get back in after a crash, and that decision point is a very imperfect science as well. So like in 08, 09, we got in a little too early relative to the low, but here we are, seven years later, almost 8 years later, and you didn't have to be exactly right to have done spectacularly well. I guess I'd like to kind of go back, just the recent pullback so far this year. We talked about how, this year doesn't make a full picture of history. But I would like to, point out, just this year, we're not even, a month into the year, and we've already clawed back over 2 years worth of gains in the stock market. Even if you look at the S&P 500, which has been the most lofty because of its capitalization-weighted nature, where we are right now and where yesterday takes us all the way back to the end of 2013. So, for those listeners out there that might still be fairly heavy invested in stocks, I would invite you to, do an exercise. If you have the ability to pull up a stock chart of the S&P 500 over the last 20 years, let's say, and that's going to capture the big crash after the tech bubble and the big crash after the housing bubble. Take a look at that chart and ask yourself, try to forget what you know about the recent news, but ask yourself, looking at that chart, have I missed the opportunity to sell at the top? And I think most folks looking at that chart would say, wow, there's a little wiggle from the top, but man, I still have my chance to get out at or near the top for a big chunk, if not all of my, my risk assets. So that really speaks to the psychological difficulty of doing the right thing. Sometimes you just need to look at things from afar and realize, hey, that bounce I'm waiting for to get back to all-time highs before I sell, doesn't matter. I can still get out almost near the top, which is very hard to do.
A little hard. So what we've seen is, as I pull up that same chart, John, what I see is I see one big bubble spike up into 2000, then a very big pullback, which was the thing that got me off my duff and really looking at things, and then another big spike up to 2007, and then obviously another big pullback, and then another even gianter spike up this time. Hearing a lot of talk, though, why this time is different, that the central banks, have our back this time. Certainly they've proven that to be true. What would cause you to flip this to think that maybe it's time to go long? Does if Draghi and Yellen came out holding hands and said they're going to jointly announce QE 5, 6, 7, 8 together at the same time? What would possibly get you to think that there's more central bank juice left in this particular party?
Chris, Mike here. There's a lot of different things that we look at that would make us want to invest on the way down. Valuations. We keep talking about valuations. Valuations are very important. Valuations are terrible timing tools, unfortunately. But valuations over the long term do matter. You look at those spikes back in 2000, 2007. Both were overvalued times. If you look at, for instance, the Shiller price earnings ratio, both of those times, actually in 2000, the Shiller PE got up in the 40s. And in 2007, 8, into into the high mid to high 20s, and here we are in the mid to high 20s again. At least we were near the top a couple months ago. Valuations have been really insane at the top of those three peaks. Really, it's almost like a whole shape change or shift higher in valuations. Really, which started in the 90s, the mid to late 90s, and really existed throughout that whole period. Only once did we even pull back to a somewhat median or average valuation. That was in the 09 low, where we pulled back to a Shiller PE of around 15, which is still far from other bottoms. So we've been living really for the last 20 years or so in an era of higher valuation. So it's been challenging, to say the least, to exit these peaks at the right time. So what we would look for, first of all, is a retreat in valuations. Now, we can't say that we're going to wait for a generational reset in valuations back to a Shiller PE of 7 or 8, which hasn't happened since 1982. We can't do that. I mean, that could last one's whole lifetime. But what we can do is say that every time we were up at a 30 Shiller PE, bad things happened. We can look at other metrics too. But first thing we'd look for is a retreat in valuations, number one. Secondly, we'd look at market internals, like breadth, for instance. Breadth measures what types of stocks are leading the market up, how many stocks are making new highs versus the rest of the market. The breadth has been terrible in this market for the last couple of years. Really, it's been just a handful of stocks that have been leading this market higher, at least for the last year. 2015 was all about the FANGs. Facebook, Apple, Netflix, Google. Other people say Fanta, see stocks, and they throw in Tesla, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
But you look at those stocks, you're completely disillusioned by what this market has done, and those stocks will look a lot like the Nifty 50 in the 70s. They've led the market up, and almost certainly they'll fall over time as much as the market, probably more than the market over time, just like the Nifty 50 did. So we'd be looking for an improvement in internals, which would include both, like I said, valuations and breadth. We'd look for a number of things. We'd want speculation to recede as measured by a New York Stock Exchange margin debt. So at the risk of this answer getting long-winded, I guess from a mechanical standpoint, I would respond to say some of these things we'd want to see easing a little bit, because you never really know. They're not just going to go away and revert back to normal. And we're going to be doing a lot of things on the way down. Ideally, we have a reset over time of, let's say, 30, 40, 50%, so that we can offer good opportunities to buy to our clients, and we would do so. But we don't know if we're going to go down 70, 80%. We don't know if we're going to go down 20%, bounce 20%, and then go down 40%. So what we'll do is we'll layer in different tranches like we did yesterday. We put a 10% slice in on a pretty fast pullback, and we did so with appropriate hedges using options. If we crashed the next day, which I guess is today now, we would have been able to adjust that original option, and we might have doubled the position to 20%. If we crashed an additional 30% from there, we might have increased to 30 or 40% and made some adjusting trades on the options. That's not to say that that's a risk-free strategy. We almost certainly would have been down a few percent on a portfolio basis if we fell that quickly. But we'll be looking to layer in over time. So that's the approach that we can envision happening.
Well, excellent description of that. And we're talking about equities here, and we've talked about cash as a position. John, what about bonds in all of this? Is there anything to be done with bonds here except to consider them a moderately safe place to put money and maybe get a few percent out of this? Or is there a larger play that still makes sense here?
Yeah, sure, Chris. Happy to talk about that. I'd like to just quickly append, if I might, to what Mike just elaborated, which very, very nicely covered, you know, our views on things. You know, in respect of your comment about, you know, what if the central banks pull up the bazookas again? And, you know, I guess there might be some out there thinking that no matter whether valuations have retreated or all this other stuff that Mike talked about having moderated somewhat, you know, is the fact that the bazooka is coming out in and of itself a reason to get invested or more positive or optimistic about the stock market? Well, so, you know, there's actually been some great work done on that, you know, by folks like John Hussman. And, you know, basically, you can look at periods of time when central banks are easing or providing accommodative monetary policy, and there are periods where that is all they need to do and markets levitate. And there are also periods like 2008-2009 when they were aggressively easing interest rates, yet the markets continued to implode. And, you know, John Hussman refers to this as the hinge, you know, and basically there's a set of conditions that when those conditions are present, things like Mike alluded to, deterioration of breadth, deterioration of market internals, a sudden shift of investor mindset from speculation to conserving capital. When these kinds of things are present, you know, at least history says, it almost doesn't matter what the central banks do. In fact, when they get more and more aggressive in those kinds of environments, it may just, you know, could convey greater desperation and panic on their part, and investors run to the sidelines even more quickly. So right here and now, where we are right now, the things that are present historically haven't been supportive of central bank job owning in action being a durable, reason to be, assuming that the market's going to fly higher. So it would take a lot right now in changing those things for us to salivate and want to put down our defenses in any material way due to central bank, you know, desperation at this point. Your question about bonds, real big picture from a long-term investment class standpoint, the easy money's been made in bonds already. The last 30 years have seen an interest rate environment that has been nothing but downward. So interest rates from the early 80s right through today have done nothing but plummet, which is the main positive driver of bond returns. So there isn't mathematically much more room for them to go down, interest rates. So the upside in bonds is pretty limited. Scarily, the best case scenario for bonds is outright deflation. You know, long-term bonds and cash are the best places to be in a deflationary environment, which appears to be the scenario that's going on right now. The upside is pretty minimal. So, sure, there's a place for some bonds, but, relative to cash, we'd much rather hold a bunch of cash right now than be heavily invested in government bonds, which, you know, increasingly are becoming suspect of, you know, fiscal malfeasance on the part of governments all over the world. And then there are, of course, some bond classes that are outright, you know, scary to be, like junk or high-yield bonds right now. They were great the last several years, but in the last year and a half, they've seen a bloodbath, and we think it's just the start of something bigger. You know, it started with some of the energy companies and some other sectors, but there seems to be some contagion going on there, and we don't think it's by any means all clear yet in that sector. Municipal bonds as a broad class have been okay, but there have been some very, you know, specific examples where they're getting pretty dicey. You know, Puerto Rico is on the, you know, teetering on the edge of default. We all know what's going on in Chicago. So some municipal bonds are downright scary places to be right now, and there may be, you know, if we get a further, evidence that we're entering recession or even worse, municipal finances aren't likely to do well in that scenario. So we could see some more widespread issues with things like municipal bonds. Emerging market bonds have been very volatile. They've sold off quite a bit. A lot to do with currency moves there. So and those, that's a very volatile sector right now. So short conclusion to the long answer. We don't see a lot of upside in bonds, but sprinkled around the edges, some of the high quality, you know, treasuries and government bonds can be, you know, modest adders to value. We're starting to see a little bit of, you know, insulting still, but modest interest on some short-term CDs. That's in part due to some of the Fed action on rates, but, you know, that fully hasn't flown through to savers quite yet, and won't for a long time. So we like cash, to sum it up.
On a risk-adjusted basis, cash is good. Cash is always king in a deflationary environment, particularly when you look at the risk. So to summarize this, you know, one of the reasons, the prime reason that we at Peak Prosperity have been endorsing you guys is because of what we just heard here, which is obvious attention to all the details. You've got the macro picture, the micro picture, but most importantly, you have a diligent approach to risk management. And what I really wanted to do in this podcast was to say, hey, not only do you guys talk about it, but you actually really do it. It's one thing to say you've got a risk management strategy. A lot of people say that, but the number of people who actually have one that's in play that, you know, can be tested. And I don't think by any stretch we've been through the major test in this yet, but here we are. We're down 8.5% in this year. So this was a good time to circle around and say, hey, how's it been working? And the answer is, hey, it works. So first, thank you for having that diligence and thank you for having that offering, because I think risk management is the key thing for anybody who's got money in the markets at this particular point in time.
Well, thanks, Chris. This is Mike. We really do appreciate those comments. We live it because that's who we are, and we apply these principles day in and day out. It's not been an easy risk management hasn't been a very interesting topic for many to listen to or to talk about with us over the last couple of years. But it's a funny thing. No one wants to talk about it until it starts raining. You know, no one wants to talk about it until there's a problem, and then everyone wants to talk about it. So we just kind of continue day by day, and we keep applying the discipline and sticking with what we really believe is true based on our experience, knowledge, and our analysis, and that's what we'll keep doing. And so far, as you said, we're down 8.5% this year. Who knows what will happen the rest of the year? We do think that from here forward at these levels in the market, we're still dangerously overvalued. So we're going to continue to be very, very cautious as we presently are.
John, any final words to add to that?
I think Mike said it best. You know, we try to do our job on a daily basis. Sometimes they're harder than others, but we're guided by, you know, truth and you know, data, and you know, that's what keeps us going.
Well, fantastic. So thank you for your time today, gentlemen. And we will make sure, as we always do when we have you on the show here, we're going to place a link at the bottom of the write-up accompanying this. So if anybody listening wants to talk to you more specifically about hedging and perhaps hedging in their own individual case with their own individual portfolios, we provide a way for people to do that. It's a free call to our listeners, no obligations whatsoever. It's hard to find a better deal than that. You just click on the link at the bottom of the podcast, fill out a short form, and the rest will take care of itself. So if anybody's interested in that, I would encourage you to talk more specifically about your case, because every case is individual. But these gentlemen here have some really good heads on their shoulders and will treat you well. So with that, thank you, Mike. Thank you, John. And I can't wait to have this follow-up conversation in a few months.
Thank you so much, Chris.
Thanks, Chris. And thanks to listeners. Have a great day.